Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, May 27th, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adioye Jr., and joining me is Funhouse's own Alana Pierce.
Hi, what's up?
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
Discord, like, muted you clapping, so it just looked very strange, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, that happens. We're starting this show, like, a few minutes late on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames because we had to tinker around and put an ocean behind you, because you're rocking a green screen, which means we can do things.
How dare you blow my cover this quickly? No, I'm definitely at the beach. The issues we had were noise canceling the wind, which is definitely... happening. No green screen.
Alana, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
For people who, everybody should know who Alana Pierce is, but for the few that don't, what is the elevator pitch on Alana Pierce?
Oh, I didn't prepare any of this. Hi, I'm Alana Pierce. I've been in games media for 8 years. I started out in Australia working on national television and radio, and then worked at IGN for 3 years, and I now write Inside Gaming. I just wrote our daily show along with Brian, and work at Funhouse. I'm a producer.
Nice.
And whatever
for people who might not know, which they should know, what is Inside Gaming?
Inside Gaming is, I don't even know really where to start, but basically a Rooster Teeth owned brand, now was Machinima in the past. YouTube channel is youtube.com/insidegaming. You can also find us on roosterteeth.com. We have also daily gaming news show. Today we're talking about censorship on the internet. We also do reviews and previews and unboxings and all that kind of stuff, but mostly a focus on daily news show.
And of course, people can probably find that over on youtube.com/insidegaming if they want to check that out. Now, you're a lady of many talents, including DJing. And this was actually a conversation we had a few months ago on Kind of Funny Games Daily that I want to bring back up, because me and Tim were talking about this. The best club bangers. Now, for you, as a DJ, I'm putting you on the spot. What are your 5 go-to club bangers?
It absolutely... So this is the thing about being a DJ that people don't realize is complicated. It absolutely depends on who the crowd is. You can't... There's no go-to. It depends who your audience is. There are certain songs that work very well for completely different audiences. Like, if I'm DJing at gamer events, which I've done a few of, you can't go wrong with dropping the Pokemon theme song at the end of the night when everyone's really drunk. But when I'm playing at, I had a residency here in LA, when I was playing there, they mostly wanted deep house. So I'm probably not going to drop the Pokemon theme song there. So yeah, the answer is completely depends on the venue. The biggest skill of DJing, in my opinion, unless you're scratching and you're doing that kind of technical side of it, is reading a room and figuring out how to get people to dance. So there's no banger. There's no go-to.
But in your dream venue though, say you're at a venue that is like, okay, I'm Alana Pierce. These are my people. Their tastes are my tastes. I can play whatever 5 tracks I want to. What 5 tracks are you going to? And how many of them include Lil Jon?
I could look at my most played and give you that answer of like whatever songs I go to the most. I mean, I tend to go from like 125 BPM up to, look, there are just songs that I really love. One of them is I'll play pretty much anything by Sheba-san, if you know who that is. There's a song called I Like Your Booty, which I just absolutely love to play. I really love some good trap. RL Grime, anything by him is going to be really good. It's hard for me to give you five actual songs. I'm going to say Sheba-san's I Like Your Booty, because I really love playing that song. It really slaps. But there's a lot of remixes that I really like playing. Like, there's a Gwen Stefani song. I think it's technically No Doubt that I'm forgetting the name of the song. It starts with the clock ticking. You know, the one.
You lost me.
Song that
you had me at RL
really
Grime.
Just fucking hard.
Gwen Stefani, that's where my knowledge kind of dissipated.
It might technically have been No Doubt at that time, but yeah, I don't know. You put me on the spot here, man. I could literally look it up, but
I'm gonna circle back around toward the end of this.
Okay.
The show.
Okay. I could pull out my laptop and be like,
you have an hour.
Because, oh fuck, okay. Okay, I'll make it work.
Alana, enough about club bangers. Let's talk about a possible PS5 event, GTA 6 speculation, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping, of course, it's Kinda Funhouse Week. We're doing all sorts of crossover content with our pals at Funhouse, like this episode of KFGD featuring Alana Pierce. To catch the full rundown, head over to kindoffunny.com/funhouse. Later today, we're reacting live to that Last of Us Part 2 State of Play stream. That's happening right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames at 1 p.m. Pacific. Alana, are you going to tune in for that? Are you going to watch that Last of Us State of Play?
Of course. Yeah. I'm scared to say it, but I have not seen any spoilers. I've avoided everything entirely. I haven't even wanted to talk about it because I don't want to get in that territory. But yeah, I'm really excited. Can't wait. Should be good.
Dude, I'm so mixed on it because, like, one, I'm excited for The Last of Us Part 2, obviously. I'm ready to see more of it. I'm ready to play it. On the other hand, I'm like, do I really want to see 20 more minutes of gameplay from this game? Like, I know I'm sold. I know I'm excited. I kind of just want to play it at this point.
It can be an interesting one where, like, you get to a certain point with the game where you don't want to see anymore. Like, I really felt like I saw too much of Horizon Zero Dawn before it came out. It was like, I have seen a lot of this thing, and I don't need to see any more of it. That totally happens. With The Last of Us, I'm intentionally not starting to play it, because obviously codes have gone out, until watching the state of play today. I don't know why I wanted to do that, but I feel like I wanted to see their last, like, marketing beat, because I feel like the things we've seen in that game have been very, very different, and I don't know, just excited about the hype of this game, and, you know, what it means for the sending off of this console generation cycle, so...
Yeah. Again, that reaction is going on at twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames at 1 p.m. Pacific. Later today, we're doing another sponsored Predator Hunting Ground stream. Join me, Greg, Nick, Andy, and Fran as we hunt each other down on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames.
Fran Mirabella the third?
Fran Mirabella the third, which of course is going to be a fun time because he always plays a great Predator. And when I say a great Predator, I mean... likely the worst Predator, because he's very undecisive about what he wants to do as Predator. So come through for that. Again, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames is happening at 4 o'clock, 4 p.m. Pacific time. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Mohammed Mohammed, Blackjack, and Al Tribesman. Today we're brought to you by patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 5 stories today.
A baker's dozen!
Starting with our number one, could we finally be getting that PS5 event next week? This comes from Jason Schreier and Takashi Mochizuki, both of Bloomberg. That's right. I believe this is Jason Schreier's first work at Bloomberg.
Yeah.
Their article reads, Sony is planning a digital event to showcase games for its next generation PS5 that may take place as early as next week, according to people with direct knowledge of the matter. The virtual event could be held June 3rd, though some people also caution that plans have been in flux and that date may change. Other PS5 events may follow in the coming weeks and months, and Sony is not expected to reveal every essential detail on the console during its first presentation. A Sony spokesperson declined to comment. The Japanese tech giant has only let out a trickle of information on the PS5, which the company says is still planned for release this holiday season. Despite the COVID-19 pandemic, that has damped its promotional plans. Fans have been eager to hear about the lineup of video games that will launch alongside the console and those that will be revealed later. Sony's biggest rival, Microsoft, has put out regular streams and updates about the upcoming Xbox Series X, which is also planned for release this fall. Most video game publishers' announcement plans have been disrupted by the pandemic, which has led many to replace planned live press conferences with pre-recorded presentations. So, Alana, these rumors have kind of been floating around for like about the last month, but this June 3rd date has actually been one that has come around this week. Jason Schreier reported today. I think Jeff Grubb also was throwing that date around this morning. And Jeff Grubb, of course, is the dude who's been kind of spinning the rumor mill about quite a few things lately. Does How do you feel about this June 3rd date?
Fine. Listen, the whole thing with this, like, in this entire story is I'm like, I'll watch it whenever, you know, give it to me absolutely whenever you want. June 3rd makes sense. I don't feel like it matters tremendously. I do feel like I don't know that much about the PlayStation 5 outside of Sony's presentation. But I also know, and I don't think I've said this anywhere, so minor scoop for you, that Sony has tried to do presentations already this year. And I know this from developers who were supposed to be part of those presentations, but didn't, because for some reason, somewhere in the Sony hierarchy, they were very obsessed with the idea of having a very, very, very professional stream rather than something previously recorded. So they weren't willing to do anything outside of a massive studio with a crew of like 25 to 30 people, which for those devs who were planning to have their games revealed at those certain streams was very frustrating, because they were like, I don't understand why we can't just send you in this footage, have our marketing go out exactly as planned. But PlayStation just wasn't having the at-home quality stuff. They were refusing to do it. So I feel like maybe this is actually going to be huge, is the one thing that I'm kind of thinking, is that I know that there have been reveals that have been planned that have been put off because Sony didn't want to do them. So we might actually see a lot of games. We might actually see some reveals. I don't know. But that's what I hope comes out of it. When it actually comes to the date, you know, I don't care. I'll watch it whenever they do it. You could do it at 3 a.m. Yeah. and I'll still wake up to watch that. So whenever you like, I guess, the same as E3 timing makes sense.
Makes sense. And this is one of those things that me and Greg have been kind of going back and forth on. And ever since GDC got canceled, it seems like the rollout for the PS5 has gotten very interesting, because they had that Mark Cerny talk that was very obviously meant for GDC, for that type of audience. They had the reveal of the DualSense, which also seemed like a thing that, in the way that they revealed it, like, it doesn't come off as too weird, but at the same time, like, I could have seen that as a GDC announcement alongside the, I believe we got reports of Unreal Engine 5, supposed to be at GDC, as I understand it. And so, like, all those things could have easily been packaged together as a thing we got earlier in the year, and as a thing that ramped up to what would have been a PS5 event that we could have gotten by now. Like, I honestly think we could have gotten a PS5, like a bigger PS5 event by now if everything went their way. And if, like, work from home wasn't a thing and things didn't go to shit, pretty much. And so, like...
Sure did.
Yeah.
I never really knew what Sony was going to do, especially after they had the Pro event in... It was at December 1 year. I was still at IGN. They sent Ryan McCaffrey. And I know that was a really weird event, because we watched the stream, and watching that stream didn't really translate very well, because of course they keep having the problem of, you know, streams only being in 1080 or buffering or whatever else, so audiences at home don't really get a good read on it, whereas the people in the room get it just fine, and now they lose the people in the room. Like, I've done 3 game previews since lockdown started, and all of them have been on Discord, where nobody's willing to ask a question, there's awkward lag, sometimes someone's mic cuts out, the games just don't look as good as they would in person. So figuring out how to market any of this stuff without having people in the room or without having people have hands-on with the PlayStations is just really tough. Like, I know this whole thing has got to be a mess for them, especially when they're, you know, everyone who's worked so hard on that system is going to be really excited about the launch. It's so hard to figure out how to show it in the best way that I feel like, you know, sometimes we feel like these massive corporations have their shit together. In this instance, they just absolutely don't, and they're figuring it out as they go. And yeah, they probably had a lot more planned for GDC that just didn't end up working that way, so they have to pick and choose what's going where and what timing. And I feel so sorry for these marketing teams. This is going to be really, really tough.
Yeah, it's such an interesting contrast, too, between them and what Microsoft is doing with their inside Xboxes. Like, this last one, the last couple have been from home, and they do have, like, Major Nelson, like, sitting at home, like, talking directly to you, and they show off the different developers, like, in their living rooms, in a way that for those showcases feels homey, but also, like, obviously, like, this is a thing that they need to do because the state of the world we're in. Whereas, to what you're saying, I don't necessarily see Sony as the company to go that route. Like, if anything, I kind of see, and I don't know, I don't think the PS5 reveal is going to be packaged up as a state of play, but I see it being packaged up in a similar polished sort of way, to where now, like, yeah, you lose the audience, but we're probably going to see this being, like, if anything, very akin to the Google Stadia Connect that we got last E3, where it was like, all right, here's 50 minutes of PS5. It's it's us. It's someone talking in front of a green screen, talking directly to you. It's very polished. Like, yeah, we're losing out on an audience, but we're still going to make this as professional as possible because we want you to associate the PS5 with this thing that is packaged packaged professionally as possible and that is polished.
I totally agree. Like, I think that, you know, Xbox has had Inside Xbox for a long time. They were already doing that kind of content. They were already streaming that kind of stuff anyway. Sony's just a lot tighter when it comes to the way that they present information, it even when it comes to preview and review stuff as well. Their embargoes are often a lot stricter. Like, everyone's gotten Minecraft Dungeons this week and is just playing it and you're openly allowed to talk about it. I'm surprised that they even let people say that they had their hands on The Last of Us. So it's just Sony's just very careful about the way that they do stuff. I'm sure it really sucks for them to not be able to do this stuff in person. So I think you're probably right. We will probably get a really professional conference, which I don't know if that's the right call now. Because I feel like, you know, audiences didn't care for what Cerny did. I could listen to Mark Cerny talk for hours. Personally, I adore that man. He can talk to me about tech forever, but the public doesn't care about that. The general gaming public does not care about that kind of stuff. So is it like, do they go the dubstep E3 hype route? Or do they try to make it like an E3 conference where they just package a bunch of trailers together? And who is going to be the person who talks about the actual hardware? Because maybe Sony's not the right person to do it for a public-facing event. I really don't know.
That's tough. Also another thing that me and Greg have been going back on, because this is like, all right, there's not really a Phil Spencer figure at PlayStation, right? Like, you imagine that for whatever the different segments of their showcase are, right? Like, maybe for hardware you do have Cerny, but then for software you have Herman Holst because he's the head of Worldwide Studios, and then for maybe when it comes to the details of price and all these things, you finally bring out Jim Ryan. Like, right now, they don't necessarily have that person.
They don't want it. I know for people, you know, friends I have who work at Sony, they are against having figureheads. I don't know why, but they don't like the idea of anyone being recognizably a part of a brand or even a studio. I don't think that they like the Neil Druckmann, Corey Barlog thing when it comes to their studio heads. They try to actively stop those people from doing outside podcasts or whatever, where Microsoft doesn't necessarily care. So I think it's because then it seems like more like a cohesive corporation than a series of people associated to different brands.
I'm that's not really weird, sure, right?
Yeah, I think it's a bad call, but it's definitely something they're strict about. But I guess it's just means for them particularly it's a real shift right now. I did want to mention Jeff jumped in the chat. Jeff Grubb here on Twitch said Sony's tightened up a lot in the last week, so I still don't know if plans to show hardware at the June 3 event. I think it's possible we still get hardware revealed in Wired out of nowhere or something. That makes sense, but I don't think they go beyond June 3 without showing the box.
Beyond. Do you have any predictions for, say, software? Like, if they do come out, let's say next week, and do you go all in and do you finally have that PS5 reveal? Like, do you have any predictions for what we might see?
Predictions and more hopes. Like, I would love to see Horizon Zero Dawn 2, even though maybe that feels a little bit too soon. Obviously, I want Bloodborne. More Bloodborne would make me very happy. That seems unlikely because we know what that studio is working on. No, I don't really have a ton of predictions because I feel like this cycle specifically with the amount of first-party Sony games, especially that aren't made in China, it's a huge thing that I think people don't realize is virtually every single PlayStation game is made in another country. And they, you know, they have those in the credits, but, you know, when you think of Naughty Dog, you don't think of the hundreds of people who are working very close to Wuhan, actually, on Uncharted 4. Horizon Zero Dawn was the same. So I feel like because of the way that the coronavirus has affected those studios who are generally working on environments, a lot of time animation and art too, they probably have had a lot of stuff really significantly slowed down because they do, outsource is not the right word because these are, you know, really talented teams who, sure, their salaries are lesser, but they're still really talented teams of people who are working on these games and they deserve full credit. It's not just outsourcing. But because, yeah, Sony does have so much production in China, and China was shut down right from the start of the year for a very long time, I just don't know what their launch lineup looks like now or how affected they're going to be. It's really hard to say. Maybe it'll be fine.
The five-star man writes into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, "Hey, Blessing and Alana, In a joint report for Bloomberg, Jason Schreier and Takashi Mochizuki report that Sony could give an online conference showcasing some of its next-gen games as early as June 3rd. Assuming this is true, and the ongoing pandemic doesn't change plans, when do you think Sony make the announcement confirming it? What games do you think we could see? Could we get reveals like Horizon 2, or would it be things like a new Madden, FIFA, or Assassin's Creed Valhalla footage? Thanks for everything you do, the five-star man.
I think if we get a June 3rd reveal event, I think we get first party reveals. I do. I think that they will treat it like E3. I doubt we get Assassin's Creed Valhalla because they are clearly have a marketing tie with Xbox this time around.
Yeah.
Call of Duty seems likely. Yeah. FIFA. I don't know if EA is doing a conference or not. It's so hard to keep track of everything this year. Like, yeah. It's so weird to be in this week. And know that, like, right now, any other year, I would be panicking about E3. It's very strange. But no, I think EA's definitely doing a thing. Yeah, yeah, okay, they are doing something. Then maybe we'll get, like, a reveal of FIFA or something. But yeah, I do think that they'll go hard if they do it around this time. It makes sense to me. This is kind of the time you want people to be excited about buying the stuff later in the year.
Yeah, I agree. I think first party is a given if they show up. To what Alana is saying, right? Assassin's Creed Valhalla has a deal with Xbox, which I think is pretty obvious, and so I don't think you'll see that. But yeah, I think you will see, if not Horizon 2, at least like what some of the launch titles will be. And so like if things go the way that I've been predicting, you'll see a Knack 3. You'll see whatever else is there. I imagine you'll see every single time I forget the studio's name, Resogun Studio, who like recently said that Arcade is dead.
How is Mark? I think you'll see Mark something. Yeah. No, wait. Marquise? No.
Mark Cerny. House Mark Cerny. No, it's House Mark. I think you'll see House Mark's game that they've been working on because I think, like, we made the prediction earlier in the year, and I stick by it that, like, whatever game they're working on it in partnership with Sony, and I think it's going to be an exclusive launch title. So I think you'll see that. And I honestly think you'll see the big guns if we do get that June 3rd event. And so as far as when do I think Sony makes the announcement confirming a June 3rd date, if it is happening June 3rd, I think, well, it's going to happen after The Last of Us thing today for sure. And like at this point, like they ran out of time for that.
Do you think that they could announce the next conference as part of the stream today?
That like at, like end the stream saying like return for new info on June 3rd?
Possible, yeah.
Maybe, but I also feel like For this stream, they want all focus to be on The Last of Us Part 2 in a way where they don't want anything to distract from it. And so I could see it being Friday or Monday. Like, I feel like Friday is kind of a weird day to announce like something that's coming up. But Monday also feels too soon if it is June 3rd. So
I think it's most video game announcements and reveals occur on a Tuesday or a Thursday. Which is like, doesn't mean it's going to happen again. It's never a Friday. And news on a Monday is generally pretty bad. So I'm going to just put a guess in for Tuesday next week. It's just,
so
why not?
If it's happening on the 3rd, you're saying the day before they came out and they're like, tomorrow, we're coming out.
That is next week, isn't it? I'm sorry. Dates are just really complicated. But yeah, I could see them doing that. Or it'll be tomorrow. They do want to focus on The Last of Us, though. So, like, that's a complicated thing. It's like, I know that Sony right now is trying to, in this PR mess they've got with The Last of Us Part 2, trying to push that as hard as they can. You know, they started up an official podcast. They've very, very intentionally let people announce that they have review copies and when the review embargo is up so that they can
have the episodic
focus on all
too.
Of that. Yeah. So I feel like, are they even going to do this before The Last of Us? Like, because then the review embargo is on the 12th. I don't know.
Things are so messy because if in a perfect world, Last of Us Part 2 would have came out in February and Ghost of Tsushima would have probably already been out by now. And so like now we're at a point where...
I think they may have been initially slated for May.
Ghost of Tsushima?
Maybe it was always... They definitely pushed for The Last of Us rather than for themselves. That game's fine, but I think it may have originally been intended for May. I'm not sure.
Yeah, like I don't think they ever announced a spring date, but I think the assumption is like when Last of Us got pushed to May, that then pushed Ghost of Tsushima, right? Mm-hmm. And so like with everything kind of being fucked up the way it is, and now you have The last list for June 19th. You have Ghost of Tsushima for July 17th, and you have Iron Man VR, which is coming out like the first week of July. And now it's like, all right, cool. Now we got to fit in the PS5 in there somehow. And I think no matter
again,
how
they do it, they're between a rock and a hard place. And everything. Like, there's still so much stuff that we don't have announced that by this time of the year I would know about. There would have been a huge Call of Duty event by now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what's happening.
And so I'm gonna stick with the prediction of Friday. We hear Friday seems too risky. I'm gonna say Monday we hear about what's going on. That's
I think I would also go Monday or Tuesday. But then again, like, I feel like it would make sense to not do this event until after the Last of Us embargo. We got good sources saying June 3rd. Man, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Walking a hard
it's
place.
Tough out here. It's tough out here.
It's tough out here. Story number two, Alana. Is GTA 6 coming in 2023? I'm pulling this again from Jeff Grubb at VentureBeat, who writes, Take-Two expects to spend $89 million on marketing during the 12-month period ending in March 31st, 2024. That is more than twice the marketing budget for any other fiscal year over the next half decade, according to the company's recent 10K SEC filing. Why is Take-Two planning to spend that much more on marketing in fiscal 2024? One of the most likely explanations is that is when the publisher expects the release of Grand Theft Auto 6, according to analyst Jeff Cohen of investment firm Stevens. Each year, Take-Two files a 10K with numerous financial details, including its plan for marketing spend for each year for the next 5 years. In its previous 10K, Take-Two notified investors of a spike in marketing costs for fiscal 2023, but that spending has now shifted to fiscal 2024. This movement in spending likely reflects developer Rockstar Games' current plans for the release of Grand Theft Auto 6. Cohen points out this marketing metric previously predicted other Rockstar releases. Quote, "We're not sure how much we should be reading into this shift, but we would note that this disclosure accurately predicted the launch of Red Dead Redemption 2 prior to that game's announcement," Cohen wrote in a note to investors. Quote, "Take-Two management has spoken very confidently about the pipeline over the next 5 years, and existing live services execution has been excellent. However, the timing of the next Grand Theft Auto remains top of mind for investors, particularly with the stock near all-time highs," end quote. If Cohen is right, then Rockstar currently plans to release GTA 6 between April 2023 and March 2024. Of course, that could change if the game encounters delays. And with the ongoing success of GTA Online, Grand Theft Auto 5's online component that makes millions of microtransactions, Rockstar isn't in a rush. There then came an update, I believe this morning, from GamesIndustry.biz that goes, a Take-Two representative told GamesIndustry.biz that the table in the 10K reflects marketing commitments made to third-party companies. As Rockstar is an internal Take-Two studio, that undermines the notion that the reported marketing commitments would be related to the next Grand Theft Auto. So there's a lot there. But, Alana, when do you think we see GTA 6?
You know, it's weird because 2024 sort of makes sense. I would buy that. But it's really, it's complicated now because anything else that Rockstar brings out that has an online component that competes with shark cards just is competing with itself. Like, in theory, they would be splitting up their audience. They bring out GTA 6 and they take away a huge install base from GTA 5, potentially, or they have to support two games at the same time. Like, it's complicated for them no matter what. When do we see it? How long was it between 4 and 5? It was like 8 years or something, wasn't it?
Oh, 4 and 5. 4, I want to say, came out in 2008, I want to say, and then 5 came out in 2013. And then for even more context, Red Dead 2 came out in 2018. So 5 years between, well, I forget about Red Dead Redemption. Red Dead Redemption 1 came out in like 2010.
We got a list. I always forget.
We got a list?
Yeah. Okay. Manhunt 2, Bully Skull. Okay. GTA 4, 2008. Yep. Bully was also 2000? No, that was Scholarship Edition.
Bully Scholarship Edition, yeah.
So that was 2008. This list is all over the place because it has re-releases like Max Payne. It was like Xbox Originals on Xbox 360. Okay, I guess Max Payne 3.
Max Payne 3 is in there somewhere too. We were talking about Rockstar.
Good game. I love
PS3 that. Generation was wild for Rockstar.
Yeah. So Red Dead was 2010. Payne 3 was 2012. That is wild for Rockstar.
To yeah. Right.
Fucking output.
And then the year after they put out GTA 5.
GTA 5's 2013. So, okay, it's completely unpredictable. I take everything back. I feel like we're going to get it. Probably, I feel like about 4 years makes sense. I think that Rockstar generally want to release a game either the year of or the year before the end of a console cycle, so then they can port it to the next console so that they can get double the sales, and they can start with a really fresh install base. So I would not be surprised if quite soon we hear that Red Dead is coming to next-gen consoles as well.
That definitely makes sense.
With a beefed-up online service, too. So I think that they'll probably focus on that before focusing on the release of GTA. But this whole story, especially the mention of marketing commitments made to third-party companies, wasn't the news story the other day that they were releasing, like, 80 games or something of sort?
Oh, yeah, Take-Two. Yeah, like, yeah, they're releasing, I think, 93 in the next 5 years.
My guess is that's a focus on mobile. Yeah, I feel like you can spend that much money marketing mobile games. That's not that difficult to do. But an interesting thing about the way that I only learned this the other day, which, you know, maybe is obvious to most people, but I didn't know, is the way that marketing for this game, this stuff works, is you can allocate a marketing budget, but you don't actually have to allocate the game. So the reason that BioShock was on every billboard and every bus ever, at least that was definitely the case in Australia, was because another game got pushed. So then they were like, well, we already spent all this money for this quarter, so we have to advertise something. So it ended up being BioShock Infinite. So BioShock Infinite probably wouldn't have sold as well as it did or become as huge as it was if they just didn't have basically unallocated spots that they'd already spent money on. So it could be anything.
Huh.
And it can shift.
I think all those are good points. I think that Take-Two statement, I kind of believe it with a grain of salt, right? Like of them saying that, hey, like these reported numbers are from third parties. That said, like everything still kind of lines up in a way where I'm like, yeah, but 2023 sounds right.
They can't lie to their investors. They can't lie on their 10Ks. But there's no reason they couldn't lie to gamesindustry.biz. They can.
I also feel like silence would have been a better option because, like, who cares if we predict that GTA 5 or GTA 6 is coming out in 2023? Like, if you look at, to point back to, like, the release dates thing, right? Like, I think modern Rockstar is kind of easier to predict than Rockstar during the PS3 era, right? Like, GTA 5 came out in 2013. Then we didn't get anything from Rockstar until 2018 with Red Dead Redemption 2.
Mm-hmm.
5 more years is 2023. I could easily see like there being a 5-year development cycle there, right? And maybe it is planned for 2022, but then it gets pushed. Like, I think all that kind of lines up in a way where it's like, yeah, GTA 6 is probably going to be 2023. Like, if I had to guess any year, it'd be that year. And like the marketing numbers here kind of lines up with that too, in a way where earlier in the story, like Cohen points out that these same metrics were used to predict Red Dead Redemption 2, and so like. Who knows, man? Yep. Everything kind of checks out in a way where it's like, all right, even if these numbers don't truly reflect GTA 6, we can still predict that GTA 6 is going to come out in 2023.
It's like it's almost irrelevant. Like that year just makes sense regardless. But again, that 93 games wouldn't all come out in that one year.
They
wouldn't all come out in that exact fiscal year. So that doesn't make any sense either. That would be over a period of time. I think they said over the next 5-10 years. Forgetting that story.
Over the next 5 years, with like the possibility of them being delayed, obviously, and different things happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also, let's take two, which like, you know, at that point, you're bringing in like like the NBA games. You're bringing in all the different sports games. You're bringing in Private Division. You're bringing in Gearbox. And at a certain point, like I'm sure it adds up, especially when you bring in mobile games and in the casual experiences. And so.
More BioShock. We shall see. Yeah.
Oh yeah, new BioShock. I forget that was like announced, kind of
thing that happened.
Yeah. Story number three. Silent Hill is back, kind of. I'm pulling this from Michael McWherter at Games Radar, who writes: Silent Hill's returning in video game form, though not in its own video game. Pyramid Head and Cheryl Mason, also known as Heather, are both coming to Dead by Daylight as playable characters. The next chapter in the multiplayer horror game will hit PC and consoles on June 16th, and it will let players struggle to survive/kill everybody in a new map based on Silent Hill's Midwich Elementary School. Mason, the protagonist of Silent Hill 3, appears as a new survivor, while Pyramid Head steps into his natural role as a sadistic killer. If you don't want to play, or if you don't want to wait to play until June, you can try Dead by Daylight Silent Hill out now in the public test build on Steam. Dead by Daylight already hosts a star-studded selection of crossover characters before, including a Stranger Things chapter that brought in the Demogorgon as a killer, and similar appearances for Freddy Krueger and Michael Myers. This is the first time Dead by Daylight has crossed over with another video game, though, and it could have hardly picked a more iconic villain from the history of video game horror. Alana,
first things first, super on board. I'm gonna play the hell out of this. Love Silent Hill. Silent Hill 2 is one of my favorite games ever. Silent Hill PT, technically just called PT, is PT, probably my favorite horror experience of all time. I love it so much. But I had this thing with Silent Hills where I was like, if that doesn't come out, it's not really that much of a loss because I doubt it ever beats PT. PT is so good. So I'm fully on board. I know that the rumor mill is really talking about Silent Hill a lot lately. It's such a big question mark. Obviously, Konami can do it without Kojima 100%. I feel like they will if they put together Metal Gear Survive. I can't see why they'd be against making Silent Hill. It seems like a no-brainer, but yeah, everyone's very excited about the idea of it right now, and I can imagine it looking real pretty on a next-gen console. So this indicates that it is definitely happening. I don't feel like this is necessarily related. It's just a cool crossover. Because I don't think they need the market testing to see if people are still interested in Silent Hill. I think they know that they are. If anything, PT consistently shows that and how often people still talk about that. So it doesn't, it doesn't indicate that something is 100% going to happen, but I think it's cool regardless. I'm on board.
The five-star man writes into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you, Canon, says, "Hey, Blessing, and welcome, Alana. Dead by Daylight announced Silent Hill's Pyramid Head will be arriving in June. He'll be joining horror icons such as Leatherface, Freddy Krueger, Ash Williams, and Ghostface as guest characters in the game. Is there a horror character either from movies or games that you would like to see join the game? Also, what could this mean for Silent Hill as a franchise? Does this add to or take away from the rumors of Konami selling the IP?" The five-star man. As far as horror characters, mm-hmm. I don't really have one in mind, honestly. Like, I feel like the iconic horror characters that I think of are like Freddy Krueger and like and Jason, and like Freddy Krueger's in the game, and Jason had Friday the 13th, and so nothing comes to mind immediately.
Like, what I want, which seems extremely well, it's not that unlikely. Huge Batman fan. Read a lot of Batman comics. There are a lot of instances where Batman is shown as this like nightmarish predator villain who's completely insane, or like alternate universes takes on Batman. If I could have an evil bat like Batman, I would love that. Otherwise, I would say the Babadook. I feel like that would be both funny and fun. Take that character in that universe. But generally, I love horror in general. I'll take whatever. But as for the second part, what could this mean for the Silent Hill franchise? Like, again, it doesn't necessarily mean anything because, I don't think they need that market testing. Does this add to or take away from the rumors of Konami selling the IP? I don't see Konami selling the IP unless it is sold to PlayStation for an insane amount of money. But frankly, like, I don't even think there's a value that you can put on a franchise where everyone knows that name. It's just too valuable to a company to have Silent Hill as something they can pull on at any point in time. That, especially where IPs that have had multiple sequels that have all sold well is just so valuable. I can't imagine Konami being like, nah, let's get rid of it, whatever. So if anything, I think it probably is more... Yes, I would say actually it takes away from the rumors of Konami selling the IP a little bit, because it implies Konami is actively collaborating with people on the franchise. So they're still actively working on it. It's not like it's something that's dead that they want to sell off. I feel like it might mean that, we do get Silent Hill is potentially a launch title or something. I don't know. Don't think they're going to sell it, though.
Yeah, no, as far as like the selling thing, I think at most we get maybe a partnership, where Sony licenses the IP from Konami and then uses that as a first-party game. Or not even a first-party game, but as an exclusive title. But even with that idea, I don't think this necessarily means anything towards that. Like, this, I think, completely stands on its own as a thing. Like, Konami as a company, I feel like, is kind of willing to do whatever with their IP, like, especially if you look at the those what are they called? Not pachinko machines. Or are they called pachinko machines? The gambling machines. Yeah. Like as far as what they do with Metal Gear Solid and that, and Metal Gear Survive and the things we've seen coming out of Konami, like I don't necessarily think that they're above licensing out their IP and their characters for things like this. And granted, this is a more awesome thing, right? Like this is a way more welcome thing than, let's say, Metal Gear Survive. That said, right, like as far as where do we see the IP go from here, I kind of stand by the rumors that we've gotten about the partnership with Sony. Like I don't have any sort of insider information, but I think those rumors make sense. And I guess I have fingers crossed that they're true, because I think that'd be a good move for both companies, as far as Sony being able to get Silent Hill exclusively on their platform, mm-hmm. at least for a period of time. Like, I think that'd be genius. I think that'd be a great move. And so, yeah, that's kind of where I see it.
I hope so. I want more. Huge fan.
Yeah.
And I would just take Silent Hill 2 remade. I would love that. I don't know that I trust Konami to do it, but I would love
it. Yeah. But like to what you're saying, right? Like, there's enough cachet behind that IP that I think it makes sense to do, right? Like, people would want it. People would go for it. And even if it isn't Silent Hills, even if it isn't like a Kojima project, like if you go back to the roots of Silent Hill, I think people would be all for it. People would absolutely want it.
The re-releases of old Resident Evil games have, or you know, remakes have absolutely mm-hmm. proven that. Like, that's the market testing. Is the fact that Resident Evil 2 and 3 sold so well. I think there's no way that Konami's not sitting on the sidelines being like, I would like
how do we do this? Exactly.
And, you know, part of it is people are always worried about them ruining another IP, but listen, Survive is not that bad. I played it. People hated it before playing it. It is an okay survival game. It is not terrible. And also, I was told that it was Kojima's idea. I don't know whether he did that and pitched it to them and then bounced. And then was like, ha, suckers, you're going to make this bad idea happen. But that's what they said. It was his idea. It's not like I loved it, but I don't feel like it was for
that genre. I got more genre. Hate than I deserve.
I think so, yeah, because of the context. And I don't want to just like completely rule out the idea that Konami could make another very good Silent Hill. Naturally, they would not be the ones developing it. But, you know, it's not, you know, they're not necessarily going to ruin your IP. I'm not going to rule it out, but... I want to be excited.
Story number four, BlizzCon is canceled. This comes from a blog post on their website. They write, "Hello, Blizzard community. Several weeks ago, I shared an update about our uncertainty around holding BlizzCon this year. Since then, a lot has changed, and a lot also hasn't changed. During this time, we've had many discussions about what holding a convention could look like in light of all the health and safety considerations we'd want to make. We've also talked about different paths we could take and how each one could be complicated by fluctuations in national and local health guidelines in the months ahead. Ultimately, after considering our options, we've come to the very difficult decision to not have BlizzCon this year. We're feeling deeply disappointed about this decision and imagine many of you will feel the same. I truly love BlizzCon, and I know that's a sentiment shared by everyone at Blizzard. We'll sorely miss connecting with so many of you at the convention and recharging our geek batteries this fall. But we'll meet again. We're talking about how we might be able to channel the BlizzCon spirit and connect with you in some way online. Far less impacted by the state of health and safety protocols for mass in-person gatherings. We want to do it as soon as we could, but given that this is newish territory and different factors involved, it will most likely be sometime early next year. BlizzCon is also a stage for big esports events in Blizzard games each year, so we're also looking into alternatives for supporting some of the high-level competition that would normally take place at the show. We'll tell you more about our plans as they develop, but in the meantime, we hope to see you exploring the Shadowlands, hanging out in the tavern, pushing the payload, and wherever else the Blizzard universes may roam. Stay safe and stay well." This makes sense. Of course, this comes after like a series of cancellations of literally every single event this year, and so this is not like a surprise or anything. But as an update, like, it's good they're canceling it, and like this is interesting, especially for BlizzCon and what BlizzCon has kind of been over the last couple of years, because like, BlizzCon has not necessarily had the best run if you look at the last two, right? Like, you look at
this time.
Yeah, like you look at you look at 2 years ago with BlizzCon, and there was that whole like Diablo mobile game that they revealed, and the guy being like, "Oh, is this an out of season April Fool's joke?" And that kind of whole blow up there. Then yeah, last year with the whole Overwatch stuff, or not? Was it Overwatch? The Blitzchung stuff. I forget the name of Overwatch. Was it Hearthstone? Yeah, with Blitzchung being banned from the game over some bullshit. Like, you know, they've not had the best run. As far as what BlizzCon is,
that they get an excuse. The one thing that I don't think Blizzard has that much to show right now. In any case, the one thing that seems like a huge bummer is that, you know, Diablo 4 has been so close to having major reveals several times. So the fact that we probably would have gotten Diablo 4 as part of this event and now aren't necessarily means where do they reveal Diablo 4? And as a huge Diablo fan, it's still regardless something that I'm really looking forward to seeing more of. Where do we see, you know, gameplay? Where do we get a release date? Like, how are they going to do that? But other than that, I don't feel like, you know, Blizzard has that much to do. I like BlizzCon. I have been, I don't know, the last maybe 3 years. And it's something that, like, I will miss, like, especially watching those pro StarCraft players. Man, that's very cool to see live. Mm-hmm. But doesn't feel like a huge issue right now. I know that they have some announcements, I think, as part of IGN's rollout. It's either IGN's or Jeff's, but we don't really know what they are. But regardless, this makes sense 100%, and I don't feel like it's a major loss to the games industry or the games community and all Blizzard.
Yeah.
I don't know if you make that much money.
My thing mainly is Overwatch 2. Like, when do we hear more about that? And when do we get that? Because, like, I think predictions are falling somewhere between, like, all right, probably this fall or sometime early next year. And if that's the case, like, you imagine that BlizzCon would be the big blowout for that game. Does that then turn into like more of a like a Jeff Keighley Summer of Gaming thing, or Jeff Keighley Summer Game Fest thing, or an IGN Summer of Gaming thing, right, where like they talk about it during the summer instead of during a BlizzCon? Like, I wonder what that lead up goes, or how
I can see us getting some Overwatch 2 info there, because, you know, Blizzard still wants to be a part of the conversation, and when they don't have that event that is all about them, they have to figure out a way to stand out in parts of other conversations. Unless they were to do their own kind of press conference around the same time as BlizzCon. But I think that, you know, because they have some bad blood on them now, kind of for the first time ever, BlizzCon or Blizzard has just been an industry darling for such a long time that now they're having to navigate having some negative PR on them, that, you know, being a part of someone else's thing rather than having an event where people can yell about Chinese censorship seems like a good idea. Having even Diablo Immortal be packaged into something else is much easier for them because, you know, I feel like we keep forgetting that's not a game that's made for the West. That is not a game that's made for North America. That's a game that's made for China. It's half being made in China by NetEase. So, you know, I feel like it makes more sense for them to, they still have to please their stockholders and their investors by having information about it in the West. They still have to prove that they're doing that. It's a lot more positive for them if they do it as part of IGN's thing or Keighley's thing than if they do it to their direct BlizzCon audience who clearly hated it last time. So I feel like it just works out for everyone.
Yeah, it's low-key kind of a blessing in disguise, like, no pun intended. Like, the fact that they can kind of have a year off and not have to worry about BlizzCon. Like, I'm sure there's financial loss there. I'm sure there's, like, marketing switch-ups that need to happen. But all in all, like, the fact that they can just take a year off and not necessarily have to worry about, like, yeah, the controversy from the last 2 years kind of looming over what this year's BlizzCon is going to be. I feel like coming back with BlizzCon and say fall 2021 is going to be a way better thing for them this time around because they have that separation.
Yeah, for sure. Also, when you dress up for like Halloween, do you call yourself Blessing in Disguise?
I've not done it myself, but that doesn't stop my friends from doing it. I might do that as like a Halloween, like as a specific Halloween costume.
Yeah.
Just like wear a disguise, get up, and do that to finally like lean into it all the way. Yeah. Our last news story, story number 5, League of Legends is adding in-game advertising. This is from Brendan Sinclair at gamesindustry.biz. Riot Games is taking a new approach to in-game advertising with League of Legends. The company today announced that it will launch Summoner's Rift arena banners with advertiser branding on them during official League of Legends esport broadcasts, beginning with next month's summer split matches. Unlike traditional in-game advertising, these branded banners will be visible to people watching the action, but not the actual match participants. Riot reasons that this will avoid any distractions for pro players, as they will instead see a standardized play field. Quote, "Our aspiration is to create an environment that exudes the energy found in traditional sports, and we'll continue to work towards that," we'll continue to work towards that goal. Riot explained in a post to players, adding, quote, "We see this as an important next step to help our leagues and teams reach their next stage of growth," end quote. MasterCard and Alienware will be among the first brands featured on the banners. The banners are just the first in a number of digital products Riot is adding to its game. The company said others will be revealed before the summer split begins. So yeah, in-game ads, League of Legends.
This makes me want to die.
This is a very interesting way to do it.
This is the worst because I've been predicting this for a while. My biggest concern with something like Stadia is that they could have real-time advertising in any game that you stream at any point in time, the same way that we have for, you know, the TV shows that we watch on stream. There's no reason that they couldn't prevent you from watching a cutscene by making you see a two-minute ad or, you know, having banners in-game. I'm really worried about that with VR because the appeal to advertisers for having ads in VR is just so massive because you can't take your eyes away from it. You can't look at your phone. The amount of money in that is just so big that there's no way that the advertising industry isn't going to try to do that more with video games. Riot doing this first, obviously owned by Tencent. Again, this is like Chinese company controlling everything. That's what they do. But them leading the way for this and making it okay opens up a floodgate, I think, of things that we do not want. We don't, you know, it starts just with esports, obviously. But I feel like this is the gateway drug to cutscenes having ads on them, VR having ads in it. I just don't want it. I don't want this future, but I feel like it's absolutely inevitable and we're going to get it. And we're going to be like, you know, how now we're like, I miss the days where you didn't have to download a game. It's going to become, I miss the days where games didn't have fucking ads.
Yeah, I'm very huge curious bummer. To see what the promise is because, like, the fact, like, you can see in their approach that they're trying to balance it in a way where, yeah, they are talking about the fact that the players in the league aren't going to see the ads, only the audience, only the people watching the events, which I think is a very interesting approach because I think that is them being like, all right, how far is too far and how far can we take it before we get there? And this seems like
more selfish than that.
Weird compromise.
I think that's them being like, how do we make sure it's the most entertaining possible to watch so that the players aren't being confused by something so that we can make more money off of viewers and make sure we don't lose any viewers while also making those viewers see ads. I don't think it's like a balance or a compromise. It's literally just like that's how Tencent operates. The whole thing is just how do we make the most goddamn money possible? And if it works and people don't complain, that's it. We got ads in our PUBG. And there are ways in which I'm okay with ads. I was okay with Alan Wake and the battery ads. Obviously, it didn't work that well if I can't remember the brand. It was one of the major battery brands was like in billboards on Alan Wake. I'm okay with that. I almost find it funny. Like, you know, the presence of Monster Energy cans in Death Stranding. Yeah, like, sometimes I just find it goofy and silly and I'm all right with it. But the minute that, you know, it starts getting to be too much and if the future of gaming, even if it's really far away, is streaming based or is VR, that's where I'm like, I hate that, especially when games are being streamed live. That's why Google wants to get behind it. They make most of their money from advertising. Obviously Stadia is because they realize how much money they can make from advertising, from how much money that they can make by having someone watch a video on YouTube and then immediately jump over to playing that game and getting their purchase without even signing out of their goddamn Gmail account. Like, that's clearly why they want to get into Stadia. Is that?
Oh, yeah.
That's their drive for everything. So I just feel like the inevitability is coming sooner than I wanted. And I just wish that advertising would get away from my video games.
Do you think for esports, this might be I feel like I'm now playing devil's advocate and I'm now like defending it. To be clear, I don't like this at all. But for the sake of conversation, do you think this might be a necessary evil for esports? Because, like, when you look at regular sports, right? Like, if you watch, let's say, like a Premier League match, right? Like a soccer game, you have like the banner advertisements there.
I love
right?
that
like,
you went to the Premier League. So
yeah, I don't know why.
But you did the Premier League. I appreciate that.
That I don't know why I went Premier League. I think it's just all the FIFA I play. But like
the Premier League has like, you know, if something is overtime, it's like the minutes are sponsored. So
yeah.
Do I feel like it's a necessary evil for esports?
Like,
in some cases, yes. Because my understanding of esports, sorry to cut you off, is that it is not making as much money as anyone is suggesting it is at all. So they have to figure out how to make it more profitable. For sure, sponsorships only go so far. Once you can put them in the games, so yeah, you're going to make more money. But again, like the minute that it works, it's downhill slope from there. Keep it to esports, fine. I understand it being in esports. I get that. But it just, I just feel like we could rule it out from the jump and then it would never get worse.
Alana, I'm very curious to see how far this rabbit hole goes of in-game advertisements happening in esports. But that terrible future is so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to mom and pop shops today, where would I look?
Oh, hang on, this is the part. The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Missile Command Recharge for Switch, PC, and Mac, Phantasy Star Online 2 for PC, Castle Pals for Xbox One, Many Faces for PS4 and Xbox One, Ailment Switch, Wizard's Wand of Epicosity for PS4, Edge of Dawn for PC, Recce for PC and Mac, Blood Rage Digital Edition for PC and Mac, which is interesting. Blood Rage, I used to play a Flash game called Bloody Rage, and so I wonder if that's at all related. Rogue Jack, Roguelike Blackjack for PC and Mac, Rising Lords for PC, Mists of Noia for PC, Roller Stars for PC, Monster Territory for PC, and the Night Dive Studios System Shock has a brand new demo available on GOG.com and Steam. New dates, Samurai Showdown is coming to Epic Games Store on June 11th. Fast and Furious Crossroads has been delayed. It is now coming out on August 7th, 2020. And then, let's see, on Twitter, @PlayAvengers tweeted this morning, "We've reassembled at home and are working to finish our mission. We can't wait to show you our new gameplay and co-op in our first Marvel's Avengers War Table stream on June 24th. So look out for that. Now it is time for reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Of course, your support means the world to Kind of Funny. Because of you, the audience, Kind of Funny is able to do things like launch a new studio, have a special collaboration week with Funhouse, launch shows like the return of PSLW XOXO, and more. You can head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames if you want to support Kind of Funny Games Daily and all the content that we produce on this side of Kind of Funny. And you can gain special perks like exclusive content, becoming a Patreon producer, and more. Once again, just go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to support the show and learn more about what we have to offer. Alana.
Mm-hmm.
Frankfurter writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames just like you can and says, "Good morning, Blessing and Alana. Recently released financials for Rockstar have brought to light, and if all is correct, we are looking at a GTA 6 release in 2023/2024. It makes sense with GTA 5 still being in the top games sold each year and Red Dead Redemption 2 still selling well. However, it leads me to ask, what will they release in between now and then? Red Dead Redemption 2 DLC could do well, but the ever-insatiable gamers want more. So what else could they have up their sleeves that would satisfy the masses? Thanks for all you do, Frank Furter." Alana, do you think we see anything from Rockstar before GTA 6?
They absolutely don't need to. You know, we still don't have the goddamn GTA 5 single-player DLC that we were promised. But that's not happening. Bully 2 has obviously been rumored for a very long time, in part because I think they did a casting call from a London studio. So it's possible, but I actually don't agree. I don't think the ever insatiable gamers really need more where Rockstar is concerned. I think we're okay with Red Dead 2 and GTA 5 being supported consistently rather than a new game release necessarily coming out.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I think if you look at Rockstar as a company, like, they are a money-making machine in the way that, like, GTA 5 is still generating a ton of revenue, right? Like, the
most
fact that they have
game of all time. It's a big
deal. Most profitable game of all time, which is huge, right? Like, they could keep riding off of that success for a while if they wanted to. You look at Red Dead Redemption 2, like, they're still, like, that game is also super profitable, right? Numbers were reported. I think Greg and Adam Kovic talked about it yesterday on the show about the new MPD numbers. And yeah, like, Red Dead Redemption 2, still killing it. And so, like, as a company, Rockstar really doesn't really have to do anything until they release their next big juggernaut. That said, like, I know there have been, and this is purely me standing by the predictions I made earlier this year for what the next few years are going to look like, especially for next gen, I still stand by. There is a chance we could get a repackaged GTA 5 with additional content for next gen. I think it could make a lot of sense to make a lot more money. Like I think
that's likely. Yeah.
As far as like making new assets and making new story content, like they've done so much of that for online that it wouldn't be really too much of a stress to do that for single player if they wanted to resell GTA 5 as like a new package.
There's things that I would want. Like, sure, I'd love to see Midnight Club. I'd love to see more LA Noir. I would love to see more Bully. That stuff I don't think is going to happen. I think you're right that what we will actually get, what I would think they're going to do, is just continue to support the most recent two releases, which are both massive, highly esteemed. People really like them. Red Dead 2 coming to next gen also 100% makes sense. That is most likely what we will get. And yeah, potentially we will get more story content. I could see that happening with Red Dead more so than with GTA. But that seems the most likely to me.
Anakin JMT writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can, and says, "What's good, Blessing and Alana? Phil Spencer was on Reggie's podcast where he repeated his belief that games that still require motion capture and symphonic capture would likely be delayed, but games that already had those processes complete were likely to stay on schedule. Could developers choose to forego motion capture and using a live orchestra in favor of key animation in synthetic orchestra in order to be able to get their game out quicker? It would be more expensive, especially for key animation, but publishers may be more willing to drop a bit more money for a game to release rather than sink even more money into a stalled project that ultimately may become canceled and thus losing out on that revenue." That's a very interesting question.
Up to the devs is the thing. So like, yes, developers could forego motion capture and live orchestras, though I know orchestras are still functioning. They're just using very specific countries. But orchestras are absolutely still working on video games right now. That is actively happening. Whereas motion capture so much is not. Like, one of the biggest ones for games made here in North America is in San Diego. I know that has halted a lot of production, but they're still trying to do people independently where they can, but has for sure shut down. It's not up to the devs. The devs could do that, but when you're a developer, generally what you want is to have the game that you envisioned be the game that you envisioned. It is publisher pressure that would make that happen. Based on what I heard from what Phil said, he doesn't want to do that. He wants to let the devs decide, but I could see a studio like Activision demanding that things have key animation rather than motion capture. But that said, like, Call of Duty, you know, is very cinematic, so it hurts the quality of that product a lot. I don't think that people are going to want to drop the quality of their game, but yeah, it depends on the publisher. It's always going to be which publisher and how they've planned their years and their finances and what they've told their investors is coming out at what time and making sure they have the return so that they don't tank on the stock market. That's what really runs the games industry. Got to remember that, kids. I believe it is cheaper to key than it is to
motion capture.
Yeah, but it takes a really long time.
Yeah, like that's the thing. I think the thing that you're sacrificing really is like, or not even sacrificing, but the trade-off is all the time given for key animation, you know, and probably the loss in quality at the same time. Like, I imagine if you're a studio that traditionally does motion capture, you probably prefer to do motion capture because you get more natural movement that way. Like, it probably depends from studio to studio, because Naughty Dog, they're already like about to ship their game, so they're not really a good example. But let's say Naughty Dog was in the midst of doing motion capture. I don't think they would in a million years want the trade-off of, hey, let's just do keyframing for this, or key capture, whatever it's called. Like,
Sony's a studio who wants the quality titles. They want the 10 out
exactly.
of 10. They care about that a lot. Or as a publisher, rather. Sony's not going to push them on that. It's people like Activision that might. Like Active Blizzard, the way that they function, I could actually for sure see Bethesda doing it, which they tend to anyway. But if you ever want to understand how different publishers function, generally just look at the board, look at their hierarchy. And if the people who are on the board, who are alongside the CEO, are business people rather than people with any background in video games, you can generally predict what they're going to do. So the boards that have businessmen are the ones who aren't going to care so much about mocap and making sure things come out. Especially, it's just such a weird year for this all to be happening when
there's so much that needs to happen this year.
Launching with a new console is so important, and man, it's the timing. It's just nuts, brutal.
Yeah, I hope we don't see that sacrifice made as far as like motion capture for key animation, or especially for me as somebody who really likes soundtracks in general. Like, I don't want to see the sacrifice from having like an actual orchestra to like doing all that in a DAW, or like having a synthetic orchestra. Like, and once again, it all comes down to vision, right? Like, developers are gonna figure things out like the way they need to in order to get their game out. But I think there's something special about having, let's say, a game like Mario Odyssey, or not Odyssey, well, I guess probably Odyssey also, but Galaxy is my go-to for like a game that has a beautiful orchestral score. Granted, I don't know 100% whether or not that was done with an actual orchestra or not. I've always just assumed that's an actual orchestra. But like, you know, you get soundtracks like that, you know, when you're able to when you're able to stick to your vision the way you want to. And so I kind of just hope not to see developers sacrifice their vision in order to compromise in a way that's going to affect the game totally in a way that's visible.
I prefer to wait and have something better than to have something now, but that's not the way the stock market works. So it unfortunately isn't up to us. But no, I there are a lot of games that you would think have beautiful scores that were recorded with the instruments one by one in a lot of cases, because that's necessary for the way video game audio works. You know, it's supposed to feel like the things that you do lead into a peak and a trough. And so, you know, if you press a certain button, you're going to hear different audio to what someone else is doing. So video game scores are just really, really layered anyway. So a lot of it has to be recorded totally separately, with some individual pieces being recorded altogether. So I actually don't think that recording each individual instrument separately is that much of a problem. And I really just say that based on having a podcast with Austin Wintory, who I believe is the only Grammy winning video game soundtrack composer. He's spoken about that stuff at length, where, you know, some of his games have been he has individual instruments recorded separately and then pieces it all together. So that part I think is a lot more possible. The mocap stuff, there really ain't much you can do about. You know, voice actors are okay to work from home right now, and there a lot of that is still happening, but you can't really have a mocap setup from home.
Yeah.
It's not really gonna work. So that part is tough.
Now's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write in, let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong, so we can correct ourselves for people watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and podcast services around the globe. Let's see here.
I love that you guys do this. It's good.
Frank Furter says, the song Alana, I believe, is looking for is Warp by Bloody Beetroots. Does that sound familiar?
I mean, I like that song, but that was not one of the songs that I was looking for.
Lord of Pwn says, I believe the Gwen Stefani song is What You Waiting For.
That is correct, yes.
That is correct. Let's see here. A lot of editorializing going on, and you're wrong. Energizer batteries were the ones being advertised in Alan Wake.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, the nail biologist, for that.
We appreciate it. I wonder how much they paid for that. I think about it all the time, because that's permanently in that game forever. What does that deal look like? How do you pay? They don't know how many people are going to see it. They know that anytime anyone plays Alan Wake for the rest of their lives, they get advertised Energizer Bunny. Like, that's just so nuts. I don't know how it happened.
People are asking if there's a squad up today. There is not a squad up today. Nobody wrote in with a squad up. And so we skip that segment. And then Nailabologist says, Blessing nailed it. Take to announce they're going to be releasing 93 games over the next 5 years. Not that you're wrong, but I like patting myself on the back every now and then. It makes me feel good, you know? Alana, did you end up figuring out your five club bangers?
I really could go get my laptop, but that seems like a lot.
We can wait.
Okay, let me go get it. Right, I will literally pull up the software I used to DJ and tell you what my most played songs are.
Sick. While that's happening, Kevin, I need you on the mic. Kevin, you here with me? You here with me? There you go. Yeah, resize yourself so that you're in Alana's seat. This is perfect. Kevin, top five club bangers.
Oh, man. I think Queen has more songs than that, so I got plenty of choices.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? Wow. You know what I mean?
I know, I know what you mean. Are you going all queen? Just go to queen.
I mean, am I answering the question seriously, or because like first
dude,
of all,
answer it the way
I'm
you
not,
feel, man.
I'm not mentally equipped to handle this. I don't. There it is.
Oh, she's back. Kevin's not mentally.
I was trying to like sneak up on him like god mode, but then you moved. Okay.
Someone in the chat just said queen is overrated. They are getting timed out. There you
That's
go.
Right, Kevin.
Uh-huh. It's a heavy hammer I carry.
Use your power, man. You got it for a reason. You got it for a reason. I read out mine, I believe, when we originally talked about this on the show, but I can't even remember what I would have had on that. I must have had at least two Lil Jon songs though. Because you can't have a club that's banging without Lil Jon.
Well, this just doesn't seem right. I don't even know what that song is. Apparently, I have one particular song that I have played like 198 million times.
Really?
Which seems very unlikely.
That doesn't sound right.
No, but so if I show you like this is just Traktor, which is like just a simple DJ software. There's plenty that you can use. I have 3,000 songs in here, and some of them I don't even know that well. Okay, Super Friends. I play that a lot by ZHU, Super Friends. Mind by Skrillex and Diplo. I play a fair bit. Land on Afterlife, Major Lazer. These see the thing about these
very EDM heavy.
They're mostly house, actually. Is just because most of what I have had to play is house. But if I go to I have a folder in here that is called Shit They Know, which is songs that makes
beautiful
clubs That's dance perfect. No matter what. I have Earthquake by Tiny Tempo. I have a solid remix of Wildest Dreams by Taylor Swift. There's a trap remix of Dark Horse by Katy Perry. People love that shit. Kasim EDM remix of I Write Sins Not Tragedy. People love that. The RL Grime remix of Satisfaction. That one goes off pretty hard. Oh, Every Time We Touch by Cascada, that's a great song to play at Game of Shit. Too.
I approve of everything going on here. I think this playlist sounds great. Most of those songs I've actually not heard of, but I'm aware of all those artists. They're all great artists.
Again, the Shit They Know playlist is for when people are really, really drunk and really want to dance. They lose their minds. It's great. Harder, Better, Faster, Stronger, Diplo remix. That one's good too.
Sick. Anything that includes Diplo or Tiny Tempo or RL Grime. RL Grime has an excellent remix of Mercy by Good Music that I absolutely love.
Fantastic. Incredible. Yeah, very, very good shit.
Speaking of fantastic, tomorrow's hosts are me and Adam Kovic. So stay tuned for that. Of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.